This interview with Tokpa Tulku took place on April 22, 2019, at the Rongjung Yeshe Institute in Kathmandu. It contains 5 segments. Here, he touches on his experience learning about the Uttara Tantra Shastra in the Kanying Shedribling Shedra, explains the meaning of Chapter 1, Verse 28 of the Uttara Tantra Shastra, discusses the Rongtong and Shentong views of Buddha nature, briefly talks about Buddha nature as a topic of debate, and discusses how to approach Buddha nature teachings in practice.
Here in Kanying Shedribling Monastery Shedra, we study Gulama at the very end of our Shedra's curriculum. Mm-hmm. And because according to Kagyupa's and Nyingmapa's tradition, we believe that Gulama is very profound, and almost we put it in the category of Tantra texts, because in Shedra you study first the Sutric curriculum text, and then at the very end of 8-90 years, and then you study text. So I was studying Gulama when I was in Shedra in the 8th year, something I think. Yeah, so at that time, actually, we were the like first batch, you know, when we just Shedra started, and we have one very good Kempo, Pema Gyaltsen, and he himself studied in the Romdek from His Holiness the 16th Kamapas, and he's quite an expert in that area since Kagyupa. So yeah, I was fortunate. Even though because all schools study the 5 texts related to Maitreya, and each of we have a little bit, oh, this is more important, or that is more important, you know. But in the Kagyu Nyingma, especially Kagyupas, we think that this is actually the whole year laying out the foundation of the Mahamudra's view. Not only that, but this is the what we call the text, the bridge between, you know, sutra and the tantra. Mm-hmm. So there's always a little bit of challenges when you transit from the sutra to the tantra. Things are changes, the method changes, your modes of practice kind of changes, and so this text is a very good text to study as laying the foundation for your Vajrayana practices. In here, our Rangjung Yeshe Shed, we used Jamkon Kondo Rinpoche's commentary. So normally we have one fixed commentary that is used to the for the curriculum text, but also you have to read other commentaries, you know, from the different traditions as a reference reading. Yeah, mostly Jamgon Kondul's commentary is the main text, and also we have Mepham Rinpoche's commentary. It's not very extensive commentary, but he has some his own kind of, you know, flavors. And also Mepham Rinpoche has many other texts, not particularly as a root text commentary, but like this called Deshe Nyingbu Tongten Sengi Naro, so he has several texts which explains some main points of the Buddha nature that is mentioned in the Uttara Tantra Shastra. Whatever you learn in the morning, we have a debate class in the afternoon, 5:30 to 7, and you have to do the debate. But I think, comparatively speaking, talking about emptiness, you know, and proving non-existent existence, what is existence, it's much, much more easier. It fits to our mind. You don't have to go beyond the duality. You can be in the framework of duality and talk about it, yeah, rationally, intellectually. But to prove something that you have no idea, you know, and saying that it exists within you is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And it's always difficult to put the Buddha nature topic into the, our debate system. You always have this imbalance of, should I follow this strict rule of debate, or should I go a little more beyond that, you know? So you can debate, for example, you can use the pramana system, you know, normal debate system, and then use, for example, these three lines at the beginning of, you know, the Buddha's perfect kaya as radiates, and suchness as undifferentiable, such and such as a reason, and to see, you know, if you can really establish using that kind of reason, and kind of come down to the assumption that yes, it makes sense in certain way. Maybe not from the, it's not like proving there is a fire because of the smoke, yeah? That is more like direct, something I can experience, but that is also beyond my experience, but I cannot say it's not, you know? So I have to accept it, even though it's more like in my intellectual level. So for example, the first line, Dzogsang Kunye Tochetang, since the Buddha Kaya, perfect Buddha Kaya is radiates. You will find a little bit different interpretation of these lines, especially between Rangdong and Shendong. But I will explain you according to the, you know, Nyingma Bas or the Nipan Rinpoche's tradition. So, the first reason it says that, to put it in easy language, I think, for example, in our history, yeah, and if someone asks, for example, like me, can you also become a Buddha? Yes, of course, why not? Why? If you look at the guy called, you know, 2,500 years ago, Siddhartha, he was also like me. And then he went through practice, he did accumulations and purifications, and he did become a Buddha. So if there was one Buddha in the past, and he became a Buddha, it shows that all of us can become a Buddha, because there's no reason why Siddhartha become and not me. So this is almost like saying that since the Buddha's kaya can be manifested, and it did manifest, yeah, many times, even this kalpa, we have already four Buddha. They were not different from us, exactly the same. And through looking at that, you know, it is also, you can make assumption that everybody can become a Buddha. We all have the same possibilities. There's no different at all. If there were no Buddha at all at the past, then, you know, we don't know, because nobody has become a Buddha. But especially Mipham Rinpoche really focuses on, since that also that reason shows the first one, that since Buddha Kaya is uncompounded, you know, so it cannot be new thing. It has to be primordially there. Because if it's produced by new thing, it means that it is not uncompounded, you know. You cannot say that the Buddha Kaya is compounded. It is uncompounded. So this is the first reason. The second one, since the suchness has no different, undifferentiated. Mm. So this is more talking from the natural state of, for example, Buddha's mind or my mind. You know? So what I can experience is not the nature of mind, but only the aspect of mind. So I feel like, no, my mind is unstable, lots of obscuration, impure. Yeah? And maybe I can say, oh, Buddha's mind is very pure, this and that. Yes, it is true from the conventional point of view. But if you look in from the very subtle point of view, from the suchness point of view, from the ultimate point of view, then it is exactly the same. The only difference, you can only differentiate it from the obscuration's point of view, but not the natural state of, or the suchness point of view. So from that point of view, you can also prove that samsara and nirvana is just the different aspects of our mind. In reality, there is no, it is same nature. And the third one, since everyone possesses the gotra or the dispositions, maybe to put it in an easy way, that if you find one sentient beings in this world, yeah, I'm not only talking about human beings, but any kind of sentient beings, if you look at the innate nature, you know, quality, everybody wants to be happy, nobody wants to be suffering. You cannot find one sentient being, they say, I want to be negative, or I want to be suffering, you know, I don't want happiness. You won't find that. So this proves that all sentient beings had certain kind of elements, DNA, to become a longing for the happiness and wanting to be free from the suffering. And this proves that all sentient beings who have that kind of element, that kind of potential, have the disposition. And that is the disposition of Buddha nature. So in Pramana, we put it, this is called the three reasons, or the reasons. The first one is we call the proving the cause, you know, from the result here. Yeah? And second one is we call the reason of chini, nature, same nature, not regardless of what it appears to me, but from its natural point of view, it's same. Mm. And the third one is called the reason of cause. So by looking at the cause, you can also prove that there's something, result is there. So it basically proves we have Buddha nature, but we have uncompounded Buddha nature, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Buddha nature, as I said, that whether it's Rangdongpa or Shendongpa, because if you ask anyone what is the ultimate reality, then we all talk about this unity of appearance or emptiness, or let's say unity of luminous and the emptiness, yeah? That is there. But I think, for example, like between Nagarjuna's approach and the Maitreya's approach, so to speak, what it says in commentary is that we are talking about the same thing from different aspects. Because even if you look at in the root text, it say, "Dendam ingi gongden." You know, this is the meaning of the ing. Ing refers to the emptiness. So, for example, from the Nagarjuna's point of view, he's talking more about the emptiness aspect of that, and then Maitreya is talking more from the luminous aspects. And also you can see that into the Buddha's second will meaning and the third will meaning, yeah? But ultimately, it has to be a unity. If you fall into one extreme and say this is only emptiness, it becomes like what we call meaningless emptiness, tongba changche. And if it is like, oh, ultimate permanent Buddha nature, which is not emptiness, you also fall into the one extremes. We all have these difficulties when we talk about unity. We always wanted to choose one, you know, because it doesn't fit in our duality. It doesn't make sense when you say emptiness and the uncompounded, yeah? They always become a little bit like contradicts. But actually, that is the approach. And you use two contradicts, you go beyond all kind of extremes and duality. But yes, there's a little bit of different emphasis. For example, Rangdongpa, they're more emphasized on the emptiness aspect. And also their, for example, Buddha nature refers to more like mere emptiness, yeah? Not talk too much about the quality aspects of it. And like in Shintongpa's, yes, it is emptiness, there's no doubt, but that's not enough. You know? We also emphasize on these luminous aspects of the Buddha nature and quality. And yes, sometimes they use a little bit very strong words, such as in the truly established, you know, permanent and such, but I think these are all two wings that should keep you, you know, in balance. If you look at the two wings, it almost looks opposite, yeah? You push here, it pushes here, but actually it keeps you kind of on the middle way to understand what it really means, not the real unity, yeah? Not this speculation unity. So that's what I think, and Mepang Rinpoche also says in his commentary again and again, how they don't really contradict when you practice. And of course, you know, if you just talk it from the intellectual point of view, then we can discuss a lot. Because all these are, I think, regardless, when we practice, everybody's practicing both. There's no, you know, you do ngondo or do prostration. These are all that you're putting these two wings together. But when we intellectually discuss about it, yeah, and then we make lots of assumption, then like it becomes more like topic of debate. I don't think anyone in Tibetan Buddhism is practicing just one way. Everybody is, you know, practicing together. That's no doubt. I think the difficulty comes from is that the more you have understanding how you know, this, the dependent and the appearance are related, I think these difficulties becomes less and less. The more you have strong duality between the appearance and the emptiness, this comes up, because I think the problem is that, okay, when we say emptiness means there is no, yeah, no quality. And when you say quality, there is a quality, yeah? So we always put this into the category of existing and non-existent because of maybe not wrong understanding, but because it's very difficult to understand this unity emptiness. So when you have this emptiness as a non-existent, then it's always talk about this quality. But when you understand this emptiness, unity emptiness, there is no other than the appearance, then you don't have much problem. Because once you have emptiness, there is a luminous. Even you don't want it here, you don't have choice. It will be together. So that's a little bit difficult. And then I think it's not also, it's more like, maybe rationally it's not difficult, you know. Oh, I can understand this table is both emptiness as well as appearance. But from my emotional point of view, to accept it, it's very difficult. I only have one answer, you know. It is emptiness or appearance. It cannot be both. You know? It doesn't make sense. So I think it's more coming from our the inner duality, habitual patterns. You know? And it's difficult to accept that how emptiness and luminous are united. You know? They're not different. And we always want it to be, say, one is right and another is wrong, you know. To put them together is very difficult. But actually, some Lama says that the luminous is nothing but the energy of the emptiness. That's very nice. Because as long as you have emptiness, you have that energy. And when you don't have that energy, you also don't have emptiness. Or your emptiness is energy-less emptiness that you cannot use for anything. somehow we have, in the philosophical level, yeah, we have put this Buddha nature so high, yeah? Is it true? Because if you talk about the essence, it's difficult to understand. But actually, to practice, Buddha nature is supposed to be the like ground of your practice. Because it's the view, you know. For example, if I'm not certain that I can become a Buddha, then what's the point of the whole path, yeah? You know, it's almost like just guessing, yeah? There's no certainty, so what you call a view. If Siddhartha becomes Buddha, why me, not me, you know? Yeah? And if I have this certainty, I can become a Buddha, then it really makes a very different to your whole practice. Even the, let's say, the practice of the refuge, you know? What's the point of refuge, you know? If you cannot become a Buddha, then nobody can give you refuge, you know? So actually it's a very important practice. Not only that, it is important these days, I think. That's why somehow people are interested in, and it's good. The reason is that these days, because samsara is very seductive, you know, and so many pressure, and people are becoming more and more negative towards oneself and to others. And we're putting so many boxes in the name of security, yeah? Filling up this insecure, not knowing that actually there's a whole like chakravartin like king inside of you, and you're just running around and looking for the refuge, you know? That's one example. So these days, because if you look at depression, anxiety, yeah, all these are actually not understanding who you really are. Or who you really is, you know. And then you always look at outside, oh, can you help me, can you help me? So that's, I think, very relevant. And for example, even if you want to practice Four Noble Truths, if you have the foundation of Buddha nature, Four Noble Truths works very well. And especially, we are kind of very much deluded by the so-called the aspects of mind, you know. When I just look at my mind and the first aspect, oh, I'm so selfish, oh, I have so attachment, this and that, my mind is running here and there. Because we are so much into the aspects of mind and we have no time to see the nature of our mind, and because of that, becoming enlightened seems almost like hopeless. You know? To tame this mind, oh, it's impossible, yeah. But actually, we have an essence of mind, we have nature of mind, and then we have this appearance, you know, like obscuration aspects of mind. And when you do a little more introspection and see, oh, these are just merely advantageous, you know, obscurations, and actually, the reality of my mind is much more than that. And when you have that kind of certainty, and this is the, what you call the, actually a biggest insurance for your enlightenment travel. No matter what happens, you know, I have Buddha nature. Nobody can take it. I just need to polish it a little bit here and there, pour a little bit of water, you know. So we call it the tawa, the certainty mind towards your goal.